Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. There are a few people I think of as more heroic in that war, day in and day out, than the man I'm very privileged to say is sitting across the table from me here at the Federation for American Immigration Reform Hold Their Feet to the Fire Radio Row. He is Congressman Steve King. He represents with great distinction the people of the 4th District of Iowa, serves on the House Judiciary Committee, including on its Subcommittee on Immigration and Border Security, which is where he deserves and needs to be because he is, of course, one of the country's great leaders on the matters of immigration security and border security and the rest. We are visiting with him, I'm very pleased to say, on the day that the United States Supreme Court has just struck down President Obama's amnesty of illegal aliens. And I want to say, I believe in no small measure, the fact that that ruling was made as it was a function of the kinds of arguments you've made over so many years, Steve King. And congratulations to you as well as to the court, and welcome aboard. Good to have you, sir.
Well, thank you very much, Frank. I just appreciate being back with you here and all the work that you do. And we cross paths on a regular basis here on this hill. It's common cause brings us together. We're in the same flight pattern. Only we're going to get the others on the run one of these days. I'm happy with the Supreme Court decision. That's the best we could have expected. And the reason I say that, and you would think that a clear constitutional decision like this, there would be an 8-0 decision. But because of the appointments to the court, and I'll say the Obama appointments to the court have brought this together, there's no longer an expectation that there will be a judicious decision come out of the judicial branch of government. It is purely partisan, and I know when I first came here and I started to go over to hear the oral arguments before the court, I thought I would hear profound constitutional arguments. And instead what I heard were, I never heard a constitutional argument that was made before the Supreme Court that I recall. They were arguments that had to do with tweaking the heartstrings of the swing judge, whoever was identified to be the swing judge. Justice O'Connor was usually the target of that back in those days. Then it became Justice Kennedy.
What I'm particularly interested in, Steve King, is that when you think about a president who has done as much as this one has to undermine specifically immigration laws and the enforcement thereof at both the federal level and the state level, the cumulative effect of these is going to be something that we will be living with presumably for years to come. No matter what he does in November, no matter who we elect in November. Give us, if you would, from your vantage point on the House Judiciary Committee particularly, a sense of where the greatest impact has been. Is it the DACA program? Is it the essentially legitimating illegal aliens in this country? Is it now the likelihood that there will be some further mischief made with respect to amnesty after November?
Well, Frank, I grew up in a law enforcement family, and my father spoon-fed me the Constitution and the Code of Iowa, Iowa law, at the kitchen table, and then the Bible on the end table. And so he instilled in me a deep respect for the structure of the law, and he made it clear that I knew that you live by the law, you abide by the law, and there's a means to change the law. And so I went off into my world. All I wanted to do was just start and operate my construction company, raise my family, live the American dream. And I'm watching the debate take place in the House and Senate on the 1986 Amnesty Act. And even though it passed the House and the Senate, I recall my thoughts. I'm listening to the radio there in my construction office while I'm working. And with great confidence that Ronald Reagan would see with clarity that we cannot be rewarding people for violating the law because we'll get more lawbreakers and the respect for the law will be diminished. And he signed the Amnesty Act in 1986. And it was one of only two times that Ronald Reagan let me down. And I've just said to people, I kicked a dent in my filing cabinet when I heard that out of great frustration that how could the President of the United States miss that? How could he sign something like that and capitulate to all the forces that were at play? It started out 1 million people. It turned out to be over 3 million people. And I knew then that we had to set about restoring the respect for the law and immigration law, the rule of law. That was 1986. I expected it would be a long, hard slog, but the digression that's taken place in an accelerated mode from that point on, each succeeding president enforced the immigration law less than Ronald Reagan. And now we're at one that blatantly violates the law and has set up policies, DACA, DAPA, the Morton memos, in his attempt to legalize, it turns out to be millions and millions of people. And so I think one of the things that you had asked, or at least were thinking about, was what's been the greatest damage that's taken place here under this Obama administration or in the modern era of immigration? I think it's been the damage to the rule of law, the destruction of the rule of law, the digression of this process that I'm involved in trying to restore it. And then, though I've watched here in this Congress, among members of my own Judiciary Committee and the Immigration Subcommittee itself, people that should be focused on the Constitution, the rule of law, and immigration, we lost a vote on the floor of the House last week on my amendment that cut off that would have eliminated the DACA, the illegals, from going into the military. And when you lose people that should know what that policy is, then that tells me, and I have not point-blanked them yet, so I'm guessing, but that tells me that they have accepted the idea that the president can legalize people that are here illegally, and that DACA and DAPA and the Morton memos, all of those things have a validity that they would then can see, well, if they're legal, then why don't, and they want to fight for America, why wouldn't we want to put them in the military? That's when I see that flaw in thinking. It's awfully hard to turn those people back around again.
Yeah, not just put them in the military, put them on the path to citizenship as well.
Well, that's right. In fact, it's a shortcut to a path to citizenship. And here's what happens: they break into America, they violate our immigration laws, they come across the border, then they go to the military, and they have to lie to get into the military, and then after they've committed the crime of unlawful entry and they've lied and committed fraud to get into the military, then they take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. And I say, which time did they tell the truth? Probably no time.
Probably
did they?
Not.
They're not going to have any more fidelity to the Constitution than they have to, than they have to their own word, or that they have to the immigration laws that we have.
You've had the chance to talk to Ed Meese, Ronald Reagan's Attorney General at the time, about the decision of the administration to sign that Amnesty Act. Give us a flavor of Ed Meese's attitude towards it, and for that matter, President Reagan's.
Well, I'd say that with Attorney General Meese, and I will say to his credit, he's talked me off the ledge a time or two. So, I appreciate him, and I think he is. He's a great American person and personality and patriot. But it's just the discussion of that it wasn't he alone, but I can't name the people that were around Reagan at that time other than Ed Meese, because I've had this conversation with him. And he just said that he regrets that they had advised Ronald Reagan to sign the Amnesty Act. They thought that if he could sign it, that they would get law enforcement. That was the pledge. They would be able to secure the border and enforce the law. I don't know why a president had to make a deal to be able to enforce the law. He should be able to give the orders to enforce the law. And it's just typical of almost what happened to Bush 41 when he said, I'll sign your tax increase if we're going to get spending cuts later. Ronald Reagan signed the Amnesty Act thinking he was going to get enforcement later. Instead, we got ever more opening borders. So it was just an expression of regret that they had advised the president. And I took it that it was a collection of cabinet members that were the last ones to make that advice. And I don't know about what Reagan might have said to push back or wonder what the actual flavor was of. But I suspect he relented and signed it. And out of public pressure and out of legal advice that was coming that said, let's put this thing away. It's causing too much trouble. We've got a country to run.
We do indeed have a country to run. I know you've got to run on to other of these Radio Row hosts, and I just want to tell you how much I appreciate everything you do, Steve King. It's a privilege to be able to be your wingman from time to time and always supporting what you're up to, and especially in this area of immigration security and border security and law enforcement. It's so critical to the public safety. So your leadership and courage in the face of adversity, more often than not, is deeply appreciated.
Well, let's fix this in the next administration, Frank. Let's secure our borders, restore respect for the rule of law, turn this into a wholesome country where everybody is pulling in the harness instead of riding in the wagon, and then we'll set about and we'll defeat radical Islamic jihad, the ideology. We get that done, let's take the rest of the year off.
Okay, I'm with you.
Thank you,
my Frank.
Friend.
All the best.
My pleasure.
Next up, we'll talk with Joe Gazzardi of Californians for Population Stabilization. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
This is Fred Fleitz with the Center for Security Policy. According to the New York Times, President Obama said during a rare visit to the CIA to discuss the second phase in the battle against ISIS on April 13th, that the U.S.-led coalition had momentum against ISIS and that ISIS fighters realized their cause is lost. But the previous day, the New York Times ran a story with the headline, ISIS expands reach despite military and financial setbacks, noting that although ISIS has suffered losses on the ground in Iraq and Syria, it has expanded its presence in northern Africa, Afghanistan, and Europe. There also has been little progress in stopping ISIS's efforts to recruit homegrown terrorists worldwide. The president is in denial about the threat from ISIS. His trip to the CIA, which should have occurred 5 years ago when the violence broke out in the Middle East, was little more than a publicity stunt. I'm Fred Fleitz. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back. I'm very pleased to say, joined by Joe Gazzardi, a man who has been in the trenches of the struggle on immigration policy for quite a number of years now. We're catching up with him at the Federation for American Immigration Reform's 10th Radio Row, which they call Hold Their Feet to the Fire. Joe Gazzardi, you've been doing that admirably. We're delighted to have you with us. Joe is a media director and senior writing fellow for the Californians for Population Stabilization. And as I say, has an interesting background in this space, and I'm anxious to have you share that with our audience. Welcome back.
Thank you very much for having me back. Yes, I got my baptism in fire, so to speak, as a English as a second language instructor. I had a career change around 1986. I moved back to California, where I was born and raised, and was offered a job teaching English to migrant Mexican farm workers and anybody else who wanted to learn English. Just at that time, the Immigration Reform and Control Act was being worked through Congress and ultimately signed by President Reagan. So one of the conditions, very interestingly, one of the conditions of getting that green card was that applicants had to spend 40 classroom hours learning English. Of course, that's nowhere near enough to learn a new language, but at least it was an effort to get people started. And working all of those years in the school district, I began to learn and to see the intricacies and the complexities of immigration.
What was your principal insight, if you had to reduce it to a minute or so?
My principal insight was that there were a lot more immigrants, illegal immigrants, in the San Joaquin Valley and in California and in the United States than had been anticipated. And I found, disappointingly, I found that there was a lot less interest in learning English and assimilating into the general population than I had hoped to see.
We're visiting with Joe Guzzardi. He has been a teacher, an investment banker before that, a man who has firsthand experience with illegal aliens, trying to teach them English, trying to help them assimilate into this country. When you found, A, that there were more of them than we were led to believe, and B, there was less of an appetite to become part of the fabric of American society, this must have been somewhat shocking to you and distressing. Did that sort of sense of what we were facing seem to be perceived by officials in your native state of California or the federal government?
It was indeed shocking because I was a novice teacher and my background was not in immigration or in social issues at all. It was in banking. So I anticipated that there would be a lot of keen interest in taking this opportunity to learn English free, completely free. But I was leery right off the bat because what the students were allowed to do was get to 40 hours. That was the goal. They had to spend 40 hours. But they could come 1 hour on Monday and then not show up for another 2 weeks and then take another hour. And so, you know, that is clearly not the pattern to learn a language. And then there were a bunch of students that showed up and then they got a doctor's slip or something. So-and-so can't come. So they were excused. Somebody else didn't have transportation. They were excused. And the whole thing was cosmetic at best.
And what are the implications, as you see it, Joe, of having large numbers of Americans? I was looking at something you'd written recently at the CAPS website about a hearing that Randy Forbes held in the House Judiciary Committee, I believe, recently, which indicated just as one data point, and there's so many in this business, but one data point, something like 3.1 million immigrants have been registered by the Census Bureau as having come to the United States just in 1 year, 2012 to 2013. What are the implications if they do not want to be part of America, if they do not want to, you know, learn our language and presumably assimilate?
It's terrible. I mean, what I used to tell my students was, you need to come and learn English unless you want to be doomed to a lifetime of low wages, a lifetime of being exploited on the job, a lifetime where your children are going to grow up not speaking English either because you don't speak it in the home. There's more than 40% of California households speak a language other than English at home. So it's terrible. And Randy was concerned about census undercounting, and that's a big problem because this, you know, a government official, a Census Bureau official, knocks on somebody's door and says, "Hey, I'm here to count the illegal immigrants living in this house." And I've talked to those.
The response,
guys,
presumably, is not terribly forthcoming.
Yeah, no, right? No, they're not. You know, they're not invited in for coffee. And I've talked to those guys, and they have told me that, you know, the door opens a small crack, and they can look in, and they see, okay, I see, I think maybe four kids, and this guy is telling me that there's two people in the house. So that's certainly, that's an undercount, that number.
I'm interested in what all of this means, and maybe we could just start with in your state of California. I've heard Victor Davis Hanson, I've talked with your colleague Michael Cutler and others about just the demographics, let alone the stress on social services, the education system, you know, the taxpayers, the healthcare programs, and so on. What are you seeing firsthand as a result of what's been developing through illegal immigration in California alone?
The demographics are really dramatic. If you take some of these cities that maybe 25 years or so ago were 10, 12, 14% Hispanic, now they're 35, 40, 45, even 50% Hispanic. So there's been a huge shift in the demographics, and there are clearly enclaves of Spanish speakers, you know, Mexicans and Central Americans and so forth, that have no intention whatsoever of assimilating into the mainstream culture of California. And again, you know, as I encourage my students to learn English because it could only improve their lot in life, there are so many things to enjoy and to do in California that they just simply don't take advantage of.
One of the things Michael shared with me before is that were the United States government to actually confer an amnesty on the illegal aliens in this country, and of course we've had the good news just today of the Supreme Court telling President Obama he can't do that, but were they to get an amnesty, that immediately, and I don't know if that's an exaggeration, but I gather it's not, immediately many of them would be eligible to bring family members here as well, with various kinds of implications for, again, the infrastructure, the water supply, social services, and so on. Should this be one of the things we're factoring in to calculations about allowing this policy to continue unchecked, let alone be aggravated by an amnesty?
It's easily proven. It's easily proven. In 1986, when President Ronald Reagan signed the Immigration Reform and Control Act, at that moment there were effectively zero illegal immigrants in the United States. There were a small handful of people that didn't take advantage of it, but effectively there were zero. Now, 30 years later, there are allegedly 12 million illegal immigrants here, but probably many more than that. So there's no question that amnesties incentivize more amnesties and incentivize more people coming to the United States in anticipation of that next amnesty.
Indeed. With profound repercussions, demographic, sure. As well as societal,
all the way.
Cultural.
All the way. I mean, I worked in the school district, and a California school district, for many years, and it was a real nightmarish situation.
I know, and it's probably worse yet today. Joe Guzzardi, thank you for what you
thank
do
you,
at
Frank.
California's for Population
Thanks.
Stabilization.
Very nice to be with you again.
Here at Radio Row for FAIR. Keep
thank
up
you.
The good work, my friend.
Thank you.
Next up, we'll talk with Tom Tancredo, former member of Congress and one of the great heroes in the immigration wars.
Indeed.
Right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The Rim of the Pacific Naval Exercise, set to begin a week from today, is a perfect metaphor for President Obama's failed security policies. The unstated reason for this massive month-long drill, known as RIMPAC, is to demonstrate shared resolve and improve regional capabilities to resist the growing threat posed by communist China. Both purposes are undermined, however, by Team Obama's decision to allow China to participate. Former U.S. Pacific Commander Admiral Ace Lyons warns that China's five ships will be able to collect vital intelligence on ours and our allies, including insights into how we plan to fight them, should that be necessary. Admiral Lyons recommends that we invite Taiwan to participate in RIMPAC. Doing so would have two benefits. First, we'd stop excluding an important democratic nation explicitly threatened by China. And second, the Chinese would surely drop out. This is Frank Gaffney.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We are joined, I'm very pleased to say, here at the Federation for American Immigration Reform, Hold Their Feet to the Fire, Radio Row, by an old friend, much admired comrade in arms in the fight for sensible immigration policies, secure borders, and more broadly, national security. He is a former representative of the 6th Congressional District of Colorado, having served in the United States House of Representatives from 1999 to 2009. Ran for governor. He has run for president. He has been an exemplar of really the probity and the courage that the times require. He is former Congressman Tom Tancredo. Welcome back, sir. It's good to have you with us.
Well, thank you, Frank. Thank you. And I will tell you right now that of all the things you just said, all those nice things that you just said about me, the one that I will take away with me as the nicest was the first thing you said, which is a good friend.
And, good friend indeed.
Yes, we are.
And a much admired friend at that. Let me talk to
Likewise.
You about your immediate response to the ruling by the Supreme
yeah.
Court of the United States.
How about them apples?
This very day. Time for the fair Hold Their Feet to the Fire.
The fire
event,
exactly.
No doubt.
And for us to be here talking about it. I mean, they timed it. Who could have asked for anything better? And well, of course, it's wonderful. Now, isn't this horrible, Frank? But the very first thing I think of when something like this, when this happened, when I've heard about it, was how is Obama going to try to get around this? I mean, it's not the first thing we should say is, OK, it's over. It's done. He can't do this. Right. But I'll bet you it's not over.
I'm sure it's not over, that there will be a workaround.
That's exactly right.
Further subversion of the Constitution.
Because what does he care? What does this man care about the Constitution or the Supreme Court?
I mean, well, let's talk about this as a prime example, really, of that larger problem. What he's done in the area of immigration policy and law enforcement and
or lack thereof
at the federal level, as well as reaching down to states where people have been trying to ensure the law is enforced.
You know, when we recognize that one of the very first things he ever really promised during a campaign, during his first campaign, was something no one really paid attention to until recently, and that is that he said, "I have every intent to thoroughly transform the United States of America." Well, if you understand that, and if you understand he's still totally committed to that, and that everything he does is designed to do that, then you can understand why he presses the issue of immigration so much. Because especially immigration from Muslim countries, especially Islamic immigration, will help him in that endeavor. It does eventually change and transform America. It reaches his goal. He hates the America you and I love. If people really could understand that, then you see the motivation for all of the things he does becomes quite clear. He hates the America that I love. And he has systematically, and in a way sometimes brilliantly, worked to destroy it. And he has many comrades in arms, of course. He has many supporters in that endeavor, some of them doing it for totally different reasons, but he uses them perfectly, and he uses the immigration debate for that purpose.
This is a very harsh indictment, needless to say, Tom Tancredo. I know that you took an oath of office to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States. So did he. And to have a man who is sworn, supposedly, before God and all Americans, engaged in this kind of practice, it probably is hard for most people to believe, but at the very least, it is indisputable that the effect of these policies is to change the demographics and to change inevitably, if not immediately, certainly in due course, the voting realities of this country, which will have this effect that you're talking about.
And the culture.
And the culture.
You see, people have always been many of us have always raised the issue when we talk about immigration. We raise the issues of the impact on low-skilled labor, the lack of jobs, the cost to the education system, the cost to the medical system in America. All these things are true, but they pale in comparison to the danger posed by massive immigration, both legal and illegal, of people who don't want to be Americans, of people who will not assimilate. Now, frankly, if you think about it, of all the people that we have successfully assimilated into this country over the last 100 years or so, why is it becoming so difficult now for us to accomplish that same goal? It's because this country, the other side of that issue is, people are coming who don't want to assimilate, but this country is telling them not to. Our own government is saying, don't assimilate. There's nothing here of value. There's no reason for you to attach yourself to that old America. You want to be separate and apart, and we'll help you do that. It is to change the culture in that way. And for all times, in their estimation and their hope, and I fear so often that they are ahead of us here. They are ahead of us. They have a plan. That's the thing. They know where
and
they want to go with this.
Executing on the plan.
That's right.
It's not just an abstraction. It is actually being implemented.
Yes, and here we are going, you know, we are against it. We are against it. We are against it. But we do not have a plan to hold on to America, at least not one of which I am aware.
Yeah. Well, it is interesting, of course, you as a former candidate for president, that Donald Trump has given, in his way, such priority to securing the southern border specifically and to trying to ensure that we don't import more jihadists, at least, into the United States. You must take some heart from the extent to which this is clearly resonating with the American people, much as I guess it is. We'll know the ultimate outcome here, but it certainly seems to be resonating with the people of Britain, that their country is similarly being undermined and transformed by immigration there.
Yeah. Could the pendulum be swinging back? I certainly hope so. I will tell you this. I don't know what Donald Trump will do as president of the United States about these issues. I can tell you I hope and pray that he will do the things that he at one point said he will do, as opposed to some of the other things at another point he said he would do. But I am positive of this. I know exactly what Hillary would do. And so because I am convinced of what she'll do, not positive, but prayerful and hopeful that the Donald will actually follow through on these promises when he becomes president, if he becomes president, I am certainly going to the polls with that in mind and will be voting for him.
Let me take advantage of your expertise as a member of Congress on one other issue. As you may remember, the issue of one China has been a central tenet of American policy under successive presidents. You were a very sharp critic of it, as an admirer, as am I, of Taiwan.
Yes.
There is an exercise that is about to begin in the Pacific, the RIMPAC exercise, to which the Obama administration has invited the communist Chinese. The whole point of the exercise, of course, is to prepare for dealing with the threat posed by the Chinese. One of our colleagues, Admiral Ace Lyons, has suggested that we ought to invite the Taiwanese to participate, which might give us the twofer of having actual freedom-loving people in, not Chinese communists, and cause the Chinese to go off in a huff. What do you think of that
idea? I think it's an excellent idea. And, of course, we have a sympathetic government in Taiwan now. I mean, for the first time, really,
since a while.
Well, actually, it's the first time I think they've actually controlled everything since the separation. So it's a perfect time to do this, and it would be a great. Well, I mean, how silly of us to even think that he would do such a thing, right?
But it's worth chatting about.
It's worth chatting about.
Tom Tancredo, we have to let you get on to the next stop in Radio Row. Thank you so much for all you've done for our country and that you're continuing to do, particularly in this space out in Colorado and across the land. Keep it up, my friend. Next up, we'll talk with Dan Stein, the president of the Federation for American Immigration Reform, about today's Supreme Court ruling and more. Straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. I'm very pleased to say we're joined by the leader of this effort at the Federation for American Immigration Reform, the president of that organization, Dan Stein. He is making possible for the 10th year now, I'm very pleased to say, Radio Row, hold their feet to the fire, as he calls it. And we are joined by him on the occasion of the Supreme Court of the United States handing the president a rare but very important defeat, specifically in this area of immigration reform. Talk, if you would, Dan, about the work that you've been doing at FAIR and how that may have contributed to this happy day, this happy outcome. And again, welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. Great to have you,
Frank. Well, clearly for over 30 years, we've been concerned about an imbalance in our balance of power. The framers set up three branches of government, the judiciary, of course, and the legislature and the executive. But we've noticed for some time now the judiciary was abdicating its role to adjudicate the legality of alien admissions when the president was giving benefits. In other words, if the ACLU disagreed with an alien being denied entry, the ACLU, with no questions asked, could litigate it to the Supreme Court. But there seemed to be a glaring loophole in the so-called standing doctrine that seemed to make it impossible for any party, Congress, or anyone, states to challenge the unlawful admission of aliens by a rogue president. If the Supreme Court had gone ahead and validated Obama's very expansive power grab, essentially trying to combine in himself the lawmaking power and the executive power, it would have created what Blackstone called a tyranny, because it would have negated Congress's role in setting limits. And, of course, with the enormous pressure on our borders from all over the world, there's hundreds of millions of people who want to move here. When I spent a couple of weeks in
hundreds
London,
of thousands, I think it's safely to say millions, needless to say.
Millions, really, who'd like to live here. But almost every EU guest worker who'd come from certain countries that I talked to when I was in London and environs, they all seemed to aspire to eventually come to the U.S. anyway. But, you know, in talking to folks who were behind the Brexit move, it was very clear. By the way, they have great language. It's hashtag take control. And they refer to the Remain crowd, as they call it, as Project Fear. And language is so important. And for us on this side of the issue, it's important to have language. But it underscores how this handful of countries are all facing the same phenomenon. Obviously, assimilation is an issue, but also labor displacement. And ultimately, it's about self-determination and national control.
Sovereignty, really.
For 8 years, Obama's taken a wrecking ball to an already marginal immigration control apparatus. And week by week, he's done one thing after another. And he's articulated a power to establish whole classifications of aliens and say, you're not going to be deported. And he claims it's resource allocation. But then he went a step too far and started giving our jobs and giving benefits without any legal authority. And here's where we were able to secure at least a 4-4 vote that sends it back to a kick-ass Judge Hannon in Brownsville, who doesn't take any crap, who sends half of DOJ into ethics training. And he's going to rough him up. But he throws it in the election. Donald Trump, who mowed down 16 primary contenders, primarily on the strength of the immigration issue, assuming he doesn't get blackballed in Cleveland, the issue's now being set up where voters have a very stark choice. You know, there's no middle ground between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump.
She will be all about the Obama agenda. She's made that absolutely clear, if not a more intensified program of immigration. And Dan Stein of FAIR, when you evaluate the cumulative effect of this program of the president's, do you have a sense that we're dealing with talking about 11 million illegal aliens in this country, or is it some multiple of that?
Hillary Clinton, first of all, if you were in parallel universes, if Hillary Clinton saw her image in 1992 saying the words she's saying in 2016, she'd be shocked. So would Harry Reid. The Democratic Party positions have gone into a radical extreme position of lawlessness, essentially, say, limited immigration only by who can get here. If you get here, you get to stay by hook or crook, legally, illegally. Sanders and Clinton both articulated positions no one in the history of the Republic has ever stated, that effectively there's no control. She has no future flow reform plans to cut the numbers. She has no actual plan to prevent a recurrence of the illegal flow in. She seems to be acquiescing in things like the Wilberforce Act, which is allowing smugglers to manipulate what was supposed to be an anti-child trafficking act. Now that's being smuggled, smugglers are taking advantage of it. And taxpayers are paying huge amounts of money for refugees and others, whatever they label them, in their communities with no questions asked.
So what would you say is the number of illegal aliens, even now? I mean, let alone what would be, you know, reasonable to extrapolate.
We're talking about the greatest tidal wave of immigration in the history of any country if this had been left unchecked. Hillary Clinton wants to go bigger. And, you know, FAIR's position has always been, look, if ethnic changes come about as a result of the immigration flow, that's not an issue. But that's not the reason to have the immigration flow. Trying to re-engineer the electorate in order to bring about consolidated political power, immigration has become a political project of the Democratic Party. And the Republicans are split. And we have a president who won't define the assimilation problems that, you know, I know you talk about a good deal. If you have immigrants who don't who come in and won't accept the organizing principles under a Western democracy, who don't accept George Mason's Virginia Bill of Rights, you know, respecting one another's
religion, Constitution, for that matter, the
constitutional framework. You know, these hard fought ideals over many centuries are not to be taken lightly. And if the volume and velocity of immigration is so rapid that you're bringing in, even if it's a needle in a haystack, people who don't accept those organizing principles and model their lives around an archaic pre-reform idea, it's a threat, an existential threat to the republic.
Yeah. But especially when it's not a needle in the haystack, it's haystacks.
Yeah. Well, but Donald Trump didn't say no Muslims, okay? What he said was, we can't, until we can find the needles, we need to deal with the haystacks. So you got a better idea, you know, he'd like to know. But Donald Trump has done something the Republican Party has for several years been setting up, which is this constant refusal to listen to the voting base, to promise that and then they get into office and they don't deliver. So they had it coming.
You've just come back from Britain. As we're speaking, we don't know the outcome of this Brexit referendum. But what we do know is that an awful lot of Brits were very, very troubled about the kinds of problems that you've just described.
Oh, sure. I mean, there were promises were made, assurances were made. People were always against joining the EU unless there would be guarantees of, you know, the UK retaining some separate migration controls. All those projections have proven to be not what people thought. You can't walk around England and not see the Leave forces as being in the lead. The only way that the Remain forces can win is either some weather-related turnout problem or Scotland. Scotland doesn't seem to feel the impact of immigration, and outside of the fishing industry, there seems to be a strong let's-stay-in factor. And the Scottish Prime Minister is talking about how they would negotiate separately with the EU if the Brits leave. I think the only chance they have of winning is if they're able to consolidate the Scottish vote. But Tony Blair, Cameron, he had his own projections that have not been proven to be correct. Portugal, smuggling operations out of Brazil, the talk of admitting Turkey. I mean, you just go right down the line and people are basically saying this, you know, we're not going to have a country anymore if this continues. That and the lack of democracy associated with Brussels and how it decides things. It was a very inspiring thing because, you know, they were articulating fundamental principles of their democratic system in this country. It's hard pressed to hear politicians, you know, who can articulate their, you know, what we fought all these wars for, even defending the principle of intellectual freedom
or freedom of speech, for that matter. Dan Stein, we hope for the best there. We congratulate you on what has been accomplished here today through the Supreme Court, and the work that you do at the Federation for American Immigration Reform is deeply appreciated. Keep it up. Come back to us again very soon, if you would. Next up, we'll talk with Maria Espinoza and Julie Goldvach of the Remembrance Project about those who've lost their lives to illegal immigrants. Right after this.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We are visiting here at Radio Row, sponsored by the Federation for American Immigration Reform. Its topic and title and purpose is Hold Their Feet to the Fire, and an organization that is doing just that in a very admirable way is one co-founded by and coordinated throughout by Maria Espinoza. And one of her members in this important organization, the Remembrance Project, which provides a voice for victims killed by illegal aliens, is Julie Goldvach. Her son, Sergeant Goldvach, was unfortunately among those who've been killed by illegal aliens. Ladies, thank you very much for being with us here at Secure Freedom Radio and at this important event.
Yeah, thank you, Frank. Thank you for having us on.
Let me just ask, if I could, how big a problem is this? We know that there's all kinds of criminal activity that's taking place at the hands of illegal aliens in this country, but give us a sense of the scale of the loss of life.
This is an enormous problem, but you know, think of it this way. Because our laws are not upheld, the current laws are not upheld, borders are not secured, and politicians not having the best interests of our families in mind, one life taken by an illegal alien is one life too many. If they're not doing the job, then it's enormous. And who needs statistics for that? I have Julie right here sitting next to me. And the Remembrance Project, what we do is honor and remember Americans who've been killed by illegal aliens. And we want people not to forget what is happening, and it needs to stop.
Indeed it does. Julie, could I ask you to tell a little bit about the story of your son and what happened?
Yeah, my son Spencer was 25 years old, and he was a small business owner, plus he also had another full-time job. He started his business at 22, and he was moving to a new location, and we just finished up. He went and watched a movie with his girlfriend at his stepbrother's, and at midnight it was her birthday, so they stopped and got some cookies. He dropped her off at home and gave her a kiss, told her he loved her, and happy birthday, see you tomorrow. And 10 minutes later, he was at a red light waiting for it to turn green less than a mile from his apartment, and an illegal alien went on a shooting spree. My son was 2 of 4 shot that night, 2 of 4 that was killed that night. And a deputy actually came to the intersection of the fourth person and did a high-speed pursuit, and then the illegal alien got out, shot at the officer, but the officer was able to take him down and killed him. And
when was this?
This was January 31st, 2015. And the illegal alien had been deported 4 times. He was a known gang member in Hidalgo County, Texas. He had done time in prison. He, burglary, assault, when he was in prison, he actually got in a fight with a rival gang member, which should have extended his sentence by 20 years. But the state of Texas did a plea deal to 5 years. If they would have even done half of the sentence, in 10 years, my son would still be alive today.
Needless to say, we mourn your loss and appreciate very much the sacrifice you're making in trying to make sure that it's remembered through the Remembrance Project. And let me just ask if this is just one example, three others in this particular incident were having their lives upset and disrupted or terminated as well. Is this a problem that the government is simply ignoring or is failing at least to be transparent about? You mentioned the press isn't doing much about this, but I don't remember the government making much of a case of it either.
Exactly. Now, Frank, I met with the Department of Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson in 2014, along with the former Attorney General Eric Holder. And we met with family members and also with the Brian Terry family. And he was the border agent who was killed in Arizona with the Fast and Furious debacle. And nothing has been done about it. Like I said, I mentioned a mother who has been testifying for 17 years. And here we are again, another mother. So how many more, as Mr. Trump refers to them, angel moms, is it going to take? And how many more lives are politicians are unwilling to do what they're supposed to do?
Yeah. You mentioned Donald Trump. He actually spoke of one of your family members, as I understand it, yesterday. Talk a little bit about that case.
Yes, and we were very touched by that. He spoke about Marianne Mendoza's son, Sergeant Brandon Mendoza, who was very involved in his community as well. And actually, Spencer also did some mission work in Mexico as well, in Costa Rica. And, you know, these are the people we're losing, but it was just very touching for Mr. Trump, because he has been meeting with our families throughout the whole year. Privately, many people don't know about it. Sometimes it does make headlines and all. Videos are released out there. But Sergeant Mendoza was killed by an illegal alien, drunk driver, high on meth, going the wrong way for 35 miles in Arizona. And these are just grains of sand on a huge beach.
I'm very seized with an issue that's, as you know, taking place as we speak. Bipartisan efforts to release a lot more of people who are so-called nonviolent drug traffickers. I'm told that the vast majority of them are illegal aliens. What are your thoughts about the prospect that the United States Congress might actually authorize the president to be letting a lot more of these characters out?
Well, as I mentioned, the plea bargain, my son would still be alive. So with this release, I would expect many more parents will be in my situation and other family members will have that. My son was doing an ordinary thing when a bullet was put in his head. And it could happen to any of the American families, any of these folks. So I'm very much against it. And one of the reasons I'm here is because all the parents, 17 years of saying this, if somebody would have listened, my son would be here many more. It's just, I don't want the people listening to think it's just three people on a banner. There's hundreds and hundreds. My perspective of illegal immigration years ago was talked about jobs. You know, who's going to do our lawn? Who's going to do our maid service? It's so ridiculous that that's the conversation when lives are being, people are being murdered, assaulted, raped, and that's not, that should be a big story. There's a lot more than 49 family members that have been affected by illegal immigrants and murders, and there's not enough outcry.
Give us a sense, if you would, and again, our guest is Maria Espinoza and Julie Goldfath, of what you're specifically trying to get done in your visit here in Washington. Is there a legislative action that you're calling for? Is it just enforcing the law? What's your agenda?
We have done that, and Dan Golvich has testified, and Laura Wilkerson has testified, Senate and Congress, and many others. Like I said, they have testified. We're going and pleading to the public, because obviously these politicians are unwilling to do what they're supposed to do. And one of the ways that we're doing that also is to unite the families. And this September 16th through the 18th, we're having the first ever national conference for the families of victims who have been, loved ones were killed by illegal aliens. So if we ask your listeners to go on the website and may sponsor a family or two to come to Houston and have a workshop and be able to have a fellowship and unite and understand that what they're doing and putting themselves out there every time, like Julie pulling back that, wound again, it's worth something. We've got to be able to support our families. And there is a national program that we're implementing, and which Donald Trump, again, is the only one who has said that he would support the Remembrance Project's national program. And that is to assist families to navigate the legal system, because many times they're misguided, they're ill-advised, and they show more consideration. The judges show more consideration for the illegal alien,
the perpetrator,
than the American citizen.
This is the RememberanceProject.org, folks. It's a place where you can find out more about the important work of this organization and help sponsor participation in this conference coming up in a few months. Maria Espinoza and Julie Goldvach, thank you very much for the work that you're doing at the Remembrance Project. We look forward to hopefully helping you promote that work in September at your upcoming meeting and more. In the meantime, stay well and keep up that good work. I hope the rest of you will join us again tomorrow, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.